for our new offices, because we've kind of outgrown our offices. And Central Church was going to build a church plant up on the top. Well, that evolved so that the conference suggested it'd be better if Amazing Facts owned the whole thing. It's very complicated to explain it all. But we were going to build a church that would have a studio in it, that, and the Granite Bay plant, this would be their church home. So we all voted to do that and continued moving forward with the campaign for that. Got some plans designed, two phases. First phase is a beautiful facility that has offices and a sanctuary and a studio. And then in the master plan, we said, you know, someday we might grow to the point where we even need another sanctuary. And so there's a second phase sometime in the future for a beautiful, fully dedicated, it's like a 2,000-seat sanctuary. First phase, I think, seats 1,300. So it'd give us some growing room for this congregation. And boy, I'll tell you, we had no idea what it is like in California to build anything. I am convinced that you could probably launch a space program in Nigeria quicker than you could build an outhouse in California. The permits, and that maybe wasn't very nice to anyone from Nigeria, I'm sorry, but the permits and the red tape and the committees, you have to do studies on archaeology, in case you find any arrowheads up there, and dinosaurs. Quite literally, there's a paleontology study, and you've got to count every tree. And whew, I'll tell you, longer the days gone when you just go out in the field and you start digging your footings and build. Anyway, 90% of all that is done. We've done a whole environmental impact report that is done. They are stacks. I'm not exaggerating. The reports could easily reach as high as my hands here on the property and all the different facets of the property. And we've got green lights so far. There are still some things that are being done regarding, they have to widen the road on Sierra College. You may have noticed it's a bottleneck up there. And Placer County and Rockland City would like for our church to pay for widening that road. And normally, that's a very expensive process. And we're saying, no, 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 no. So it's just, we're optimistic we will actually have a building permit this year to build. But I just want to tell you, I've been optimistic for years, and things are going way slower than I would like to have seen. So please pray. One interesting thing that happened you should pray about is, I don't know if some of you noticed, there are several multi-million dollar homes that kind of surround the property up there. It's a beautiful, beautiful area. It's got a beautiful view of all Sacramento and sunsets, and you can see the mountains, and great place for a TV tower. But several of those homes went bankrupt because of the recent economy. And so the property next door to us is for sale. So pray about that. We don't know what that means, but anyway. So I'm just telling you what I know. I'm telling you what I know. Things are happening all the time. We get little emails, but it's just reports and things, and so I don't want to go too deep into that. But keep praying. You know, our dream is that once they start building, things will happen quick. And so we're praying about that, and it'll be wonderful to have a light on the hill up there. Wonderful opportunity also to do ministry, cooking schools and ministry and programs for the community, and to own your own building. Won't that be nice? And so that instead of it going into rent, it goes into the equity for God's family. I saw something interesting last month. I was in Australia for a month. And in driving back and forth from the place where we were meeting out to the conference office, there was this very odd car that was driving out ahead of us. The car had some apparatus on the top that looked a little bit like a camera tripod. Some sophisticated wires coming out. And the closer we got, we looked at it, and it looked like it had nine cameras or something that looked like it had nine lenses coming out of it on the top of this economy car. And I said, what is that? And my driver said, that might be one of those Google cars. So what's a Google car? And he said, well, they're driving all over the world right now in major cities, and they, as they go, they don't go too fast, they are snapping 360-degree pictures. So instead of the Google Earth just looking down and seeing the roofs and, you know, having that perspective, satellite images, you can also click on the 3D view, and it'll plop you down on a bubble where you can look 360 as though you're on that street and see what the front of the store, the business, or the home looks like. And sure enough, we followed it for half an hour, and that's what it was. Well, I never did anything about it until I was preparing for this message last night, and I looked online, and sure enough, there it was. And I called, matter of fact, Nathan, who's here with me. Oh, Karen sends her regards. She's at another service with Stephen today, and she wished she could be here, but she's not. And so I called Nathan into the office and said, look at this. And there was our home. And, you know, fortunately, they took a nice picture in the springtime, so all the flowers are blooming. It looked really good. And the yard was mowed. And then we looked across the street, and there was our neighbor's home, and the gardener that does our neighbor's house was right out there, and it snapped his picture. And some people, I understand, have been suing Google, because as this car drives up the street, you know, they got, like, taking pictures, and there might be a burglar climbing through a window, and they just snap a picture of it. And they've got all these very interesting shots. They've developed a software to protect privacy so that whenever they happen to capture another car in the picture, you're hugging, wanting to go home and check this out now, right? That it automatically identifies any car license plate and it blurs it. Because some people, I guess, were suing because they weren't supposed to be at a certain place at a certain time. And their car wasn't supposed to be in. Anyway, it's very interesting. It's like this kind of Orwellian. You know what I mean by that? Big Brother, always watching. And now in the airports, because of this recent botched terrorist attack, they're saying I'm not looking forward to flying in a couple of weeks. I got to fly again. Talking about full body scans. So it's not just that you walk through the metal detector, you're going to walk through something that basically is going to take a picture of you without your clothes on. And, you know, it kind of highlights your body. I mean, it's black and white, and it looks a little bit like a cross between an X-rated, I suppose. I'm not sure, but but if you have a gun or something like that, that would stand out, and some people are very worried about this. In Denmark, they say, we don't really care, but that wouldn't surprise us in Denmark, right? But so it's just really interesting what's happening. It seems like we're losing more and more of our freedom and privacy. And everywhere you go now, there's cameras on the streets. It's kind of neat in one sense because you can go online and you can log on to a camera that shows you what the traffic looks like at different parts of Sacramento. And you can say, oh, don't want to take that intersection because look, it's back bumper to bumper. So, you know, it's kind of nice having that feature. But then they've also got, you know, the cameras that follow you. When I was in England, they don't even get the right to speed there because they got cameras that take pictures of them at intervals along the way and they just mail them their tickets. I want to ask you if any of you have had a photograph come from the DMV and it wasn't your license and it said, you know, here you are making an illegal U-turn or you're speeding and you say, oh, I wasn't there, and they got a picture of you like this. You know, you didn't know. You got the guilty look on your face. Don't ask me how I know about this. And you say, wow, somebody stole my car that looks just like me. And that's becoming more and more common. There's always somebody watching. Now, I don't like to make a lot out of television, but there's probably some of you here that remember what was sort of a famous series years ago called Candid Camera, where they'd get these pictures of people in very unique situations doing things, and then they'd finally reveal to them that you're being watched, and they didn't know it up to that point. They'd say, smile, you're on Candid Camera. And it was really interesting because people act differently when they realize they're being recorded. I remember I was once in Korea, and I was doing some meetings, and somebody said, we'd like to take you to dinner, Pastor Doug. We had a few questions for you. I said, sure. So I went to dinner with these Korean officials, and we had a real nice dinner, and they said, now, we had a couple questions. I said, well, sure, how can I help you? And they pull out this tape player, and they put it on the table, and they press record. See, your reaction right there. I all of a sudden thought, what's going on here? Did they want to record me? And I later found out they had printed some Amazing Facts books without asking permission. And now they were going to ask permission and try and get me to give them permission, and they were going to record it. And so if they were going to, you know, they'd say, well, we've got his official permission here. And I thought, well, what are you guys doing here? And so automatically when somebody starts pulling out a camera, you say, wait a second here. It's like 60 Minutes shows up at your door and said, can we ask you a few questions? You'll wonder, what's going on? People get a little nervous. I remember in one of these candid camera episodes, it's very interesting. They had taken a street in New York City. And I guess that before they recorded it, they dug up a piece of the sidewalk and they put a very powerful electromagnet in the sidewalk and they covered it over with cement and made it look just like all the surrounding sidewalk. And they had a lady stand there, a very slight lady, and she was holding a medium-sized suitcase and she hailed a cab. She's standing there with her suitcase in hand. She hails this cab. The cab pulls over and he comes out and she says, can you put this bag in your trunk? She sets it down. Well, the bag's full of clothes and stuff, and it's not very heavy, but there is a metal plate in the bottom of the bag. And so she sets it down, then they turn on the whoever's, you know, manning this in the storefront, they've got a little powerful electric magnet, they turn on this electric magnet. The taxi driver goes to pick up the bag, and he can't pick it up. And he strains to pick it up. He says, lady, I can't pick this up. How'd you get this here? She said, I brought it here. He says, you can't lift that bag. She says, sure I can. He says, let me see. She goes over. They turn off the electric magnet. She picks it up with one hand, puts it back down again. And now, they would never do this today because the guy probably strained his back doing it and he'd sue. But back then, they didn't have those problems. And so you get this taxi driver with both hands and he's trying to lift his bag. And he says, how did you do that? You know, he is very animated. She says, what's the matter with you? Aren't you eating well? And they turn off the magnet. She picks it up. She puts it back down again. It was great. It was just hilarious. And then finally, you know, what do they do? They come out and they say, brother, see the camera over there? And he realizes it. He says, oh, you guys, and he smiles. You're on candid camera. They had one other that I thought was very interesting. Now, there is actually a moral lesson to this message. They had a lady that they pushed her car up the street, and there's a service station, gas station. And she has no engine in her car. And she's got some tape player in the glove box that's making a motor noise. So she pulls into this gas station, and then she hits the button, turns off the tape player. This is back when they actually used to like put your gas in and check your oil. Any of you remember those days? Wash your window, they say you want to do the window, you need to check the oil. And so she says to the guy, she says, yeah, can you check my oil for me? So he goes and he pops the hood, and there's no engine. He said, how'd you get here? She said, what do you mean? She said, well, how'd you get your car in here? She said, I drove. He said, well, you don't have an engine. She said, what do you mean I don't have an engine? I just drove into you. So then he goes and he looks in the trunk for her engine. And pretty soon he's like looking under the back seat for this engine. He's looking everywhere for the engine. She's insisting. I drove. Of course, they get these actresses that do that. And then they say, smile, you're on candid camera. And oh, it's the people, when they realize everybody's been watching, they feel a little sheepish. Well, you know, in our opening verse there in Hebrews, you might go back to that again. It was part of our scripture reading, Hebrews chapter 4, where it talks about the word of God being quick and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword. We all know that part. But verse 13, Hebrews 4, verse 13, and there is no creature hidden from his sight, but all things are naked and open. Talk about full body scan. And the Lord does a full heart scan of everybody. He not only looks on the outward appearance, but he looks on the heart. He not only knows what you do, he knows why you really do it. No creature is hidden from his sight, but all things are naked and open to the eyes of him to whom we must give an account. So, smile. You are on candid camera in that you're always being watched. What's happening here in this world? We are a theater of the universe. There's a number of verses in the Bible that bear out this principle. Jeremiah chapter 16, verse 17. For my eyes are on all their ways. They are not hidden from my face, nor is their iniquity hidden from my eyes. Now, all of us, if we were to be perfectly honest, would admit that we do behave a little differently in public than we might when we're alone. And some of us even have two or three different ways we conduct ourselves. You might have your church behavior, and then you've got a certain level of behavior and vocabulary where you work that might be different. And then you might have another level of behavior in your family where you really let your hair down, pardon the expression. And everyone, you know, depending on who's watching, sometimes we have different ways that we conduct ourselves. Jesus, one of the first things that he addressed when he began preaching was authenticity in your religion. Being authentic with God. Christ aimed most directly at the hypocrisy of those who were preoccupied with praying to be seen of men, fasting to be seen of men, giving to be seen of men. So much of what they were doing, they were always thinking about, what will people think of me? And Jesus was saying, well, let me read this to you. Matthew chapter 6, and you can read all the way 1 through 18. I won't have time for all of this. But he said, take heed that you don't do your charitable deeds to be seen of men. Otherwise, you have no reward of your Father in heaven. So what reward do you want is at the core of this. Who do you want to be impressed? Now, we all want to be liked. I like to be liked, don't you? I mean, when you consider the alternative, do you like to be disliked? I would rather be liked than disliked. Who do you want to like you the most? It's nice to have friends in high places. Well, who has the highest place? So being liked by God, having the approval of God, living in a way that pleases him is infinitely more important than worried about what people think of you. You know, there's a lot of studies that have been conducted to show how peer pressure works and how susceptible we all are to peer pressure. Nobody wants to stand out and be odd, but in the last days, all of us are going to be challenged in our faith. The world around us is going to mock and scoff at Bible Christians. Matter of fact, that happens right now. You know, if you tell somebody that you're a Bible Christian, and they might say, do you believe in a literal six-day creation? During the last election, they asked some of the candidates that, and it was interesting how they all sort of faunched and danced around that question, because they knew what they believed, they also knew what their constituents believed, and they knew what a lot of the educated people believe, and they thought, boy, this is a lose-lose question, because if you say that you believe what the Bible teaches, then all those who have been bombarded with the world's programming, that they believe in millions of years for the creation of everything. I remember one time I was driving down the road with my dad, one of the few moments we had alone together, and somehow the subject of creation came up. I really don't even remember the context, but my dad then said, something I said, I guess, gave it away. He said, do you believe that the world was made in six literal days? I said, yes. I knew exactly what he would think. He said, he was actually flabbergasted. And he said, in light of all that the scientists have proven? And I said, Dad, I said, it's a myth. I said, if you tell a lie often enough, people will believe it. I said, really, the evidence is not there. And he just didn't know. I think he really pitied me. He thought that his poor son was from another planet or I'd been brainwashed or something. And I wanted so much to have time to explain it all to him, because everyone wants to be liked. And don't you want to be liked by your father? Well, the day is going to come when we're all going to be challenged for what we believe. And so at the core of our religious experience, we've got to make up our mind, who do we want to impress? Who do we really want to like us? Because you're not going to have the approval of the world and the approval of God. Matter of fact, you're not even going to have the approval of the church at large. This universal body that worships the beast in his image, do you realize they're going to do it under the context of being Christian? And so you're going to be accused of being un-Christian if you don't go along with it. You've got to know so clearly what you believe and that it's from the Bible. Well, ultimately, you'll be on the winning team. Now, that's what I want. I want to impress the most important person. I want to be on the winning team. Don't you? Job 20, verse 5. Know that the triumphing of the wicked is short, and the joy of the hypocrite is for a moment. Yeah, you might give to be seen of men, or you might pray to be seen of men, and they might think that you're generous and holy, but do you get to keep your reward? Christ said that's all the reward you're going to get, is the temporary approval of the crowd. Very fleeting. Do you really care what the crowd thinks? One time Winston Churchill talked to a crowd, and there were about 10,000 people. And after he came off the podium, one of his secretaries said, well, he said, Mr. Prime Minister, I just can't imagine how wonderful it must be to talk to 10,000 people and to have all those people come out to hear you speak. And Churchill quipped, he says, if they were hanging me, I'd get 20,000. He said, you can't be impressed by the crowd. He said, you can get a mob for all kinds of things. And I appreciated his perspective on that. God wants us to be sincere. He wants us to be more concerned about what he sees than what the world sees or who we're impressing. Somebody got into an elevator in New York City, and the door closed. There was one other individual, and so they kind of looked up, and they thought, oh, that's Robert Redford, the actor. And they didn't know what to say. As the elevator was going up, she just sort of said, are you the real Robert Redford? And he looked straight ahead, and he said, only when I'm alone. Some of us are only the real person when we're alone. Abraham Lincoln was once accused, because he was a politician, of being two-faced. And he said, if I was two-faced, would I be wearing this one? I thought that was... The devil laughs at hypocrites. They're his greatest trophies. Aesop said, outside show is a poor substitute for inner worth. And some are so accustomed to wearing a disguise before others, they are unable to recognize themselves. Sometimes we can get so used to worrying about what other people think of us that we don't even really know who we are. It's like we're living in acting mode so often, we don't know what the truth is. Well, the Bible is very clear that not only everything we do, God has a record of, everything we say is recorded. Jesus tells us in Matthew chapter 12, verse 36, but I say to you, every idle word that men speak, they'll give an account thereof in the day of judgment. For by your words you'll be justified, and by your words you'll be condemned. Now, wouldn't it seem very fair to save us or to condemn us based on the words that we speak? But Christ goes on to say, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. You talk to a person for a little while, and pretty soon they'll relax, and you could find out what's really in their heart. Attorneys have discovered this a long time ago. A person might be prepped for a trial, or they might be prepped for a deposition, and they'll put up a pretty good front at first. But if you ask enough pointed questions, and you lead them down a road, and you find out what their interests are, you touch a few raw nerves, all of a sudden some people, they just can't contain themselves, and they just start blurting out who they really are. Sometimes we've seen people in public, and we're surprised the way they conduct themselves in public. And you know, I guess I'm more sensitive to this than you might be. I think about this all the time, because I'm recorded so often. Usually 2 hours a week, they're recording. And nice thing for me is, you know, that they can edit some of my bloopers. But when you're on television, and I'm not so much that, you know, people stop me all the time, but it does periodically happen. Usually they don't recognize me because I'm wearing a baseball cap, and that I found makes a big difference. And I don't do that. People say, are you hiding? Is that why you're wearing that? I said, no, my head's cold. It really does get cold. Or sunburned or something, so I often wear a baseball cap. But every now and then, I'll be in a store. And, you know, I'm just going up and down the aisles in like a drugstore or something, and I'm scowling because I can't find what I'm looking for, and I'm impatient, and I'm late. And then someone will come around the corner and they'll go, "Are you that pastor on television?" And I'll go, "Yes." I just noticed as soon as they ask me that, I put on this face. "Oh, yes, I want to be a good witness, right? I mean, don't you ever do that?" You know, someone might, on the way to church, you know, I drive like the typical maniac I am. But then all of a sudden, I'll notice ahead of me, somebody's got a Bible Universe bumper sticker. And I'll thought, well, look, I'm going to pass them, but I better do it carefully. I'm going to use my blinker. I'm going to smile as I go by. Or I'm sitting at a light on my way to church, and someone honks, and I look in my rear view mirror, and it's one of the members. All of a sudden, I go, you know, I mean, you know what I'm talking about? And I think, oh, Doug, you're kind of two-faced. And here you are, you're brooding, and you're feeling sorry for yourself, or you're irritated, or you're thinking stuff you maybe not shouldn't be thinking. And all of a sudden, someone reminds you you're a Christian, and you can switch right away, just like that. And it makes me question sometime my authenticity. That's, you know, we've got this face that we put on for being Christians. Did Jesus ever have to do that, or did he always have the same face? And his words, he was always consistent in what he was saying. Now, I don't want to give you the wrong impression. I mean, I am pretty much what you see. I remember a few years ago, we were at Andrews University taping a series. It's been over 10 years ago. We taped that New Revelation series. And at one point during the day between tapings, we also did a week of prayer, morning and evening. We had to record a commercial. It was an offer that went with the series to give them the free lesson. And it was like a 60 or 90 second promo that said, "And you know, we'd like to, if you've enjoyed this and you'd like the lesson, then call this number." And problem is, I have no teleprompter. I don't ever use a teleprompter. And I didn't know the script. And so I sat there with the camera going, what should take 90 seconds, at least an hour we were there. I'd go through it, and I'd mess up, and I'd do it again, I'd mess up, and we'd do it again, I'd mess up. And it was very frustrating, and a couple of guys were there with me, and one of them suggested, he said, "Well, maybe we ought to have prayer." I said, "Yeah, let's pray." So we prayed, and after we prayed, a couple more takes, we got it. It was great, and we packed up, and we went back home. Well, a couple days later in the Andrews University paper, someone told the rest of the story. You see, we weren't aware. They have closed circuit on the campus. And during our meetings, they had plugged in our evangelistic meetings that went to the community. Some people are in nursing homes. They had 3ABN wired that way so they could turn it on and people could get the church service around the campus, people who maybe were sick or the shut-ins. Well, they had never turned it off. And so the whole time that we are trying to tape this silly promo, the students are in their dorms cracking up at all the bloopers because we don't know that the camera's rolling. And they're all watching. But they put in the paper that day, they said, "We really ought to all attend this New Revelation program that Amazing Facts is doing here, because evidently these guys are real, because we could easily see how exasperated they were, but they didn't get angry, they didn't lose their temper, and they decided to pray when it wasn't going right." I thought, oh, that could have been any other day and it would have been a different story. But praise the Lord, we behaved that day. And so people are looking for authenticity too. Sometimes when you don't think folks are watching, someone might come up to you and say, "Smile." I remember once I was at, I'm just sharing these stories to illustrate it. You've got your own. You know what I'm talking about. You want to be Christians all the time, not just while you're here at church. It's easy, right? Because you're all, it's even harder at Central. We really do have cameras rolling. And we catch people sleeping and stuff. And I was standing in line waiting to board a plane. And I'm dressed in my regular disguise, my jeans and jacket and baseball cap and tennis shoes. That's how I travel. And It's not a disguise, they're just comfortable. I mean, I don't travel in a suit. I put my suit on before I preach. And I always like to, as soon as they call my section that's going to board, I like to kind of squeeze in pretty well at the head of that, and I try not to get in the last one on the plane, because you ever been on a full plane and you can't get your laptop in the overhead or your bag up there, and there's no room left, and they got to take it off? And so, you know, I travel a lot, so I'm just real persnickety about that. And they used to have pillows. My back hurts, and so I want my pillow. All the pillows are gone. You're all finding out how selfish I am. So I want my pillow, and I want my space, and so I'd get in the line. And so, you know, they started boarding my section. I kind of eased into the front of my section, tried to time it so I could, as soon as they said, all right, section three, I was right there to board. And all of a sudden, there at the desk, they said, well, Mr. D. Batchelor, please come and see us at the ticket counter here. I thought, I got my place in line. I got my boarding pass. I don't know. I said, oh. So I step out of line, and they all fill in. I thought, oh, man, I'm never going to get a pillow now. And they said, sir, are you Mr. Batchelor? I said, yeah. They said, can you just wait here for a moment? I said, yeah, is there a problem? Just please just hang on a moment. And the plane's boarding up, and it's like, I'm thinking, oh, what's going on here? And finally, they said, and, you know, I'm stomping my feet, and I'm folding my arms, and I'm frustrated. And finally, they said, one of our associate flight attendants recognized you from your TV program, and we had an empty first class seat we wanted to give you. All of a sudden, I went, oh. I mean, here I am. I'm looking like this typical irate traveler, you know, and they know I'm a pastor, and so they're going to give me first class, and I'm going, oh, man, come on, you know, I did everything I was supposed to do, and I've lost my pillow, you know. Don't you know I felt embarrassed? Because I'm just about lost my sanctification, and they're all looking at me going, she said he was a pastor. We're going to give him his first class ticket, and look how upset he is. I think they deliberately didn't tell me why they called me out of line, because they wanted to surprise me. Well, they surprised me, but I wasn't a very good witness that day. God sees everything that we do. John chapter 1, verse 47. Jesus saw Nathanael coming towards him, and he said, behold, an Israelite indeed in whom there is no deceit. And Nathanael said to him, Lord, how do you know me? And Jesus answered and said, they'd never met before. You know, Philip had come to Nathanael and said, come, we'll show you that we found the Messiah. And Nathanael said, who is he? He said, Jesus of Nazareth. And Nathanael said, can anything good come out of Nazareth? And he said, come and see. Well, Philip had been praying under a fig tree, probably praying about the Messiah coming. And he said, before Philip called you, Jesus said to him, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. Wow, that said something to him, because he realized that he saw him praying. And Nathanael answered and said to him, Rabbi, you are the Son of God, the King of Israel. Jesus answered and said, because I said I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You'll see bigger things than this. In other words, the idea that God is always watching is very elementary for a Christian, and yet we forget. It's not just that people are watching when you don't expect it. I've been using that as an illustration about how it affects our behavior when you realize people are watching you. But do we remember God really is watching? And it's not just God. There is an innumerable company of angels. You remember when Jesus first came into the world, first the shepherds saw one angel, and that really amazed them. And then their eyes were opened, and they saw the sky was filled with angels. You remember the story of Elisha when the king of Syria was trying to attack the king of Israel. And he said, let's ambush him as the king is traveling down this road. He'll never expect it. Well, Elisha the prophet would send a message to the king of Israel and said, you better not go down that road because the Assyrians are there ready to ambush you. And sure enough, the king sent a scout out ahead, and there they were. And they avoided the ambush. And it says it didn't happen once or twice. Finally, the king of Syria said, who is telling the king of Israel all of our plans? One of you, he said to his inner council, one of you is a traitor. One of you must be betraying our plans to ambush the king. And they said, it's none of us, your lord. It's Elisha, the prophet of God, the man of God. He sees what the king says in his bedchamber. He said, oh, so they got a secret weapon. They got a Google car called Elisha. They got a spy satellite. So they said, well, let's capture him. So they send their army. They said, where is he? He's in Dothan. Dothan is a little town. Remember when Joseph went looking for his brothers? They went to Dothan. Dothan means two wells. It's a place where shepherds watered their sheep. Two wells. Little town, didn't even have walls. Just probably a sheep fence around it. And early in the morning, Elisha's servant goes out to get some water from the well and wash his face. And he looks up, and in the morning light, he sees the glitter of all the armor of these soldiers. Here's the snort of their horses and the stomp of their feet. And there's an army. It says he sends a great army to arrest Elisha, this one prophet. And he's all he sees is the earthly army. Servant of Elisha goes running back in. He wakes him up. He says, alas, master, what shall we do? Look, we're surrounded. They're going to take us. And Elisha probably yawned. He wasn't the least bit worried because he saw the bigger picture. And he simply prayed and he said, Lord, in the benefit of his servant, open his eyes. And the eyes of Elisha's servant were open. And he saw that, yeah, Dothan was surrounded by the army of the Assyrians, but they were surrounded by an army of God, chariots and horses of fire. That's where you get that phrase. Filling the mountains and the hills surrounding Dothan was the army of God. All of a sudden, he wasn't worried anymore because his eyes were open and he got the bigger perspective. You know the story in the Bible when Job is being tempted on earth. And if anything we should learn from the book of Job is here you've got this dialogue that's happening. They're saying, why did all these disasters happen to you, Job? And to really understand that, you have to peel back the veil, and all of a sudden you're taken to heaven, and you hear the devil say, well, the only reason Job serves you is because you've set a hedge about him. This is that invisible hedge of angels that protects us. He says, you remove that hedge, and you let me at him, and he'll curse you to your face. And God says, well, I'll lengthen your leash, Lucifer. The devil goes and he takes away everything he's got, destroys his family. And does Job stop trusting when he's more interested in what God sees? And, you know, God then says to the devil, have you beheld my servant Job? And there's a meeting in heaven, it says, where the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And I'm not even going to go into who those sons of God are. All I know is they're not people on earth. Because it's a heavenly meeting. Satan says, I've come from the earth, from walking up and down and to and fro in the earth. So this meeting is not on earth. But these individuals in heaven are hearing this dialogue where God is saying, have you considered my servant Job? They're looking down on earth at people, and God is bragging on Job. Perfect and an upright man, one who fears God and hates evil. You know what that makes me think of? That verse in the Bible where Jesus said, whoever is ashamed of me in this evil and adulterous generation, I'll be ashamed of him. But whoever confesses me and my name in this evil and adulterous generation, I will confess his name before my Father and the angels in heaven. Now that's very clear. Basically, it's saying if we live in the presence of God here, if we're aware and we realize that there's a much bigger audience than we might think that's watching all the time. When you're tempted and you overcome, and you think, oh, I've let myself down. That's much bigger than that. It's not all about you. Or you're thinking, oh, sorry, I let Jesus down. It's true. It's bigger than that. Well, the angels are watching. It's not just the good angels. It's the bad angels. You and I, our hearts are a battlefield. We're in the middle of an arena. There's a stadium, much bigger than any stadium that you and I can imagine, of all heaven that is intently interested in what's happening here on earth. Talk about living a reality show. Your life is a reality show. That's true. People in our culture are so hypnotized by these people who are living out their lives in front of a camera. Some are doing it on the internet and some are doing it on TV, and we all kind of look into what these kind of pathetic lives or what's going on. You heard about that family that they fabricated, they were launching one of their kids in a balloon. I'm sorry. You got to feel sorry for them, but I told everybody that while that thing was still floating around, I said, there ain't nobody in that balloon. I tried that before with my kids. It wouldn't fly. I knew there was no kid in that balloon. Pretty desperate to get on a reality show so the world would look and see. If you could only pull them aside and say, hey, I got news for you. You are living in a reality show. And you got a lot bigger audience than North America that's watching. You got 10,000 times 10,000 angels and thousands. And when you and I are victorious through the grace of the Lord, they cheer. And God says, have you beheld my servant Doug? Wouldn't you like to have the knowledge that God is saying that? This is the great controversy between Christ and Satan. We're living on a stage where the grace of God is being played out in our lives and the attacks of the devil are being played out in our lives. Smile. 2 Chronicles 16:9. I shared this with Nathan last night and he typed it into his electronic Bible. It's one of my favorite verses. I don't often sign this in a Bible because it's the first half of the verse. That's the favorite part. Second half of the verse talks about wars. It's the first half of this verse. 2 Chronicles 16:9, for the eyes of the Lord run to and fro. Your version might say, the eyes of the Lord range. The eyes of the Lord patrol, they seek throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him. Another translation might be, God's eyes are searching through the planet. He's scanning the world to say, is there anybody down there that trusts me that I can show through them how strong I am? When Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego on the plain of Dura stood up when everyone else bowed down, God said, you know, there are some people whose hearts are loyal. I can show myself strong through them. So Jesus could go to them in the furnace. And God was able to accomplish that day on the plains of Dura through those three individuals that were more concerned about what God thought about them than what all the political leaders thought and all the people in Babylon thought. They probably had some other church members that were tugging at their robes saying, why don't you bow down like everybody else and don't make a spectacle? And they said, it's too late. We already are a spectacle. That's what Paul said. We are a spectacle unto men and angels. They're watching. See, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were more concerned with what the angels of God were thinking than the demons on earth. So they stood up. And did Jesus show himself strong for them? So the eyes of the Lord are going to and fro through the earth looking for people through whom he can work miracles of his power because we stand up for him. That's one of my favorite verses because I have to remind myself of that. Then you got Zechariah 4, verse 10. It says, these are the eyes of the Lord that scan to and fro throughout the whole world. God is looking. Who is there down there that I can show myself mighty through? Proverbs 5:21, for the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. God's looking at what we're doing. So the bottom line is, who do you want to impress? Everybody wants to impress somebody. Who do you really want to impress? I want to impress the one where it's going to make a difference. See, they say it's not what you know, it's who you know in the world. There's probably some truth to that, right? I mean, even when it comes to our trying to get all these permits that we need for this church, I've asked the project manager, I said, do you know anybody in the county that you could talk to, make friends with? And find out if you can appeal to them. And why do we get put on the back burner? Sometimes it's not what you know, it's who you know. So how do these other projects get passed through so fast? It's not just what you know and who you know, it's who you bribe, I think. It's also true who you know when it comes to eternal life. It's not just what you know. There's going to be the devil knows more than you do about the Bible. I'm not trying to undermine how important it is to know the Bible. But do you know the Lord? Do you have friends in high places? I can show you a long list of Bible heroes that had faith in friends in high places. And yet sometimes we're so concerned. Luke 22, verse 2. The chief priests and the scribes sought how they might kill Jesus, but the reason they didn't arrest him, they feared the people. Mark 11:32, Jesus asked them a question. John the Baptist, was he from men or was he from God? And you know how they evaluated how they should answer? Instead of saying, well, let's give him an honest answer, they said, let's think about this answer. What will the people think? If we say that John the Baptist was from God, then they'll say, well, how come you didn't accept him? And if we say he was just from men, they'll say, what? He was a prophet. And so their whole answer was based on what will people think of us? They feared the people. King Saul lost the kingdom because he was much more worried about what the people thought of him than what God thought of him. Even after Samuel the prophet said, you're going to lose the kingdom, the kingdom's going to be torn away from you, Saul said, okay, but don't walk away from me. Honor me in front of the people. He was still concerned about what's everybody going to think. Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned in that I've transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. Then you go to verse 30. Then he said, I've sinned, yet now honor me, please, before the elders of my people, Israel. Return with me that I might worship the Lord your God. He doesn't say the Lord my God. He says, I'll worship the Lord your God, but you honor me in front of the people. Are you afraid to speak in front of a crowd? Come on, anybody here? A lot of people are terrified to speak in front of a crowd. You ever thought about why? Heard one time that this Christian was put in the Colosseum and they released a lion that ran up to devour him, and the lion knocked him down. The Christian whispered something in the lion's ear and the lion ran off. The crowd roared, and pretty soon the lion came back and pounced on the Christian. He whispered something again, the lion ran back. And pretty soon they got the Christian out, and they said, how come that lion's afraid of you? What'd you say to him? I told him, I said, now after dinner, you'll be expected to share a few words. He's so afraid of the crowd, speaking in front of a crowd. You know, folks ask me, I said, how do you do it where you're on camera and you're talking a lot? Well, there's times I've been nervous. You know why I get nervous? I'm worried about what people are going to think of me, or I'm going to do something silly and embarrass myself. Why would it be different to embarrass yourself in front of one person or 10,000 people? It really doesn't matter, does it? It just multiplies the embarrassment a little bit. But the one to be interested in is the Super Bowl audience that's watching from heaven. You remember when David danced before the Lord? And he came home and his wife said, oh, man, aren't you ashamed of yourself? Dancing around in a linen pair of pajamas and all the maidens of Israel laughing at you. And David said, you know, I was dancing before the Lord. And I wasn't going to wear my royal robes before the Lord's ark. I was going to wear the simple garments that a priest wears. I'm paraphrasing. And David was much more interested in what God thought of him than what the people thought of him. That's the attitude I want. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 12, to them it was revealed, not to themselves, but to us. They were ministering the things which now have been reported to you, that those who preach the gospel to you by the Holy Spirit sent from heaven, things that angels desire to look into. Angels desire to look into what's happening here on earth. You know, I'm very thankful for the ability in media to edit. It happened today. During our taping of Sabbath School, just less than an hour ago, there were some audio problems, and I had to stop right there and say, can we please get that fixed? It didn't worry me that all. I know the people who are watching live on the internet, they're going to see all of that. But before it goes out on 3ABN or Hope Channel or Safe TV, they'll take it in the studio. They'll edit those comments out. Sometimes I snort or something while I'm preaching, and you know, you clear your throat, and they got this great software now. They can edit all of that out. And so when it's presented in its best format. Do you need any editing in your life? I need a whole lot. Matter of fact, they need to, it's one thing to edit a tape, it's another thing to like pass it through the eraser. You know what's wonderful is that Jesus, when you accept him, he erases our entire past life, as far as that record, when you accept him, and he gives us credit for his perfect life. And God the Father looks on us the same way he looks on his Son. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't now live a new life. The whole thing is not a cover-up, because people are watching. He wants us to live a new life. He completely and freely forgives you. And then he gives you power to be a new person. And then you've got to realize that sometimes the Lord is stepping in for you as a stunt double. You know, when they make some of these very expensive films, when they got a dangerous scene, they usually don't let the star actor do these dangerous stunts. You know why? Well, you got a multi-million-dollar budget, and then they get hurt doing the stunt, and then all of a sudden, everything comes to a standstill. I could tell you a lot of stories about productions that just either were totally canceled or came to a standstill, or a movie stopped because someone died in the process of production. And what's really sad is when they only get 9/10 of the way through a movie and then the star dies and they say, now can we patch together the footage we've got and try and make a story out of it? Some of those stunt men that step in, that do these dangerous scenes, are actually killed, are wounded. You could look online, and there's long stories. Some have become paraplegics, some have been killed, some have been seriously injured, and it was like the last stunt they did. Now, if you're an actor, and you know that they're dressing someone up in your clothes and making someone look like you because they're going to do something dangerous that you're supposedly going to get the credit for when everybody goes to see the film. I'm not trying to make too much about movies, but it's an illustration. And then they get seriously injured in doing the stunt. Would you be thankful? How would you respect those people? Well, you know, in this experiment with sin that's happened in our world, there is a stunt, it's called death, for sin. And Christ stepped in and he took the punishment and the suffering that we deserve, and then we get the glory that he deserves. That just doesn't sound fair, does it? But that's really what he's done for us. God is with us all the time and he's watching all the time. Psalm 139, and Jonah thought he could run from God. Verse 7, where can I go from your spirit, or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you're there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand will lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. You know, I want to just close with this thought of encouragement. I didn't want you just to be thinking, God's got this great big camera in the sky and he's recording everything I say and do. And that's true. God is with you. He's watching you all the time. And that's good news. But he's also protecting all the time. He's providing all the time. That ought to give you comfort that you're never alone. He's always watching over you. I actually called Wes this week and I just left a message. I said, can Miriam sing at the close of the sermon, His Eye is on the Sparrow? And I got an email back and he said, no, we're in another state. So I thought, you know, he watches over the sparrow, his eye is on me. I thought that would have been good. But we've got another good hymn. It's called Be Thou My Vision. Help me to see things through your eyes, Lord, that you're always with us, that you're always watching, that you're never alone. It's just a whole new perspective. You know, we're so programmed in this world to be conscious of what people think of us and who's watching us and what are they going to think. And I just pray that the Lord will give us that perspective like Elisha prayed for his servant. Or open his eyes. Help him to see the big picture. Isn't that your prayer, friends? That God will open our eyes and help us to see that we're surrounded by chariots and horses of fire, that God is watching over us, and that we're never alone. Everything we do, everything we are, is naked and open to the eyes of him with whom we have to do. And I want to live for his glory, don't you? I want to be able to live in a way to confess his name. And he says, and I'll confess your name before the angels in heaven. Let's stand together as we sing. And what is that number again? 547. 547.